At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. The United States Senate had a little business to do today.
Under the previous order, the Senate will proceed to the consideration of the Powell nomination, which the clerk will report.
Federal Reserve System, Jerome H. Powell of Maryland to be chairman of the Board of Governors.
And the votes are in.
On this vote, the yeas are 80, the nays 19, and the nomination is confirmed.
The newly confirmed Fed chair on the program today. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Washington, D.C. today, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday, the 12th of May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Truth be told, we didn't really even know that Jay Powell's nomination for another 4 years chairing the Fed was going to be on the Senate's agenda for today when we nailed down the interview with him last week. But we'll take it. Not really that you need a news peg for a talk with the Fed chair right now, because you can make a case that Powell and the Federal Reserve, and by extension this whole economy, are in about as tricky a spot as there has been in a good 50 years. Sure, the Fed has started tightening up, raising interest rates and shrinking its balance sheet, but all of that can seem kind of distant, right? When it costs $100 to fill up the tank, groceries are costing more than they ever have, and there is no real sign that inflation is easing off. So over to the Fed building we went today, where the first question was about how Powell is trying to do what he's trying to do.
Let me start with your most recent press conference. At the beginning, you went out of your way, I think it's fair to say, to speak directly to the American people. You actually used those words. Do you think you're getting through to the American people?
Well, I hope we are. So, you know, most of the people who listen to the press conference and follow our communications very carefully are market participants or economists, Fed watchers of various kinds. And I thought it was important to try to speak directly to the public that we serve and tell them that we understand that inflation is very painful, that the Fed is accountable to get inflation down to 2%, and that we have the tools and we have the strong desire to get inflation under control, and we'll do that.
I don't doubt that they take you at your word that you want to get this under control and that price stability in Fed speak is critical to this entire economy. I wonder what you say, though, to the person who, as you tighten up on interest rates and slow the economy down, right, which is the plan. What do you say to the person who's going to lose his or her job or maybe not see the pay raise that they ordinarily would get?
So you can see that inflation is just way too high here in the United States. And by the way, the same all over the world. Really, the global economies all around the world have been hit by a series of inflationary shocks. And pretty much, I just came back from a set of meetings with central bankers from around the world, and we're all facing the same kind of issues, and the public are facing the same kinds of issues.
Worse here, to be clear, right?
Some places worse, some places better. We're facing different challenges, but then again, our economy is more fully recovered. They may be just behind us in time. But what would I say to that person? So I would say that we fully understand and appreciate how painful inflation is and that we have the tools and the resolve to get it down to 2% and that we're going to do that. I will also say that the process of getting inflation down to 2% will also include some pain. But ultimately, the most painful thing would be if we were to fail to deal with it and inflation were to get entrenched in the economy at high levels. And we know what that's like. And that's just people losing the value of their paycheck to high inflation. And ultimately, we'd have to go through a much deeper downturn. And so we really need to avoid that.
What keeps you up more at night, the prospect of inflation sticking around or the idea that you're going to cause a recession?
Well, look, I think it's a very challenging environment to make monetary policy. And we certainly, our goal, of course, is to get inflation back down to 2% without having the economy go into recession, or to put it this way, with the labor market remaining fairly strong. That's what we're trying to achieve. I think the one thing we really cannot do is to fail to restore price stability, though. Nothing in the economy works. The economy doesn't work for anybody without price stability. We went through periods in our history where inflation was quite high. This was back in the 70s, and I'm old enough to remember that very well. And we can't fail to restore price stability.
How much do you think it matters, just on that idea of the 1970s, how much do you think it matters that there are generations of people in this economy who've known nothing but 2% inflation or less for like 50 years now?
So I think—
And that's why this is scary as hell, right?
Well, I guess I would say it this way. You know, it's a good thing that we haven't had high inflation really in 40 yes. years. It's a great thing. You know, the 70s and the 80s, it's very unpleasant phenomenon. And people are now, for the first time, many people, as you point out, are young enough that they haven't experienced that. And now they're seeing what it is. And it's unfortunate. I wish they weren't. I wish that all of this hadn't happened and we still had 2% inflation. And we need to get back to 2% inflation. Now, that's the main thing. The main lesson is we must do whatever, you know, what we need to do to get inflation back to 2%. And we have the tools to do that, and we will.
So you've said you're going to do whatever you need to do. At that last meeting, you specifically took a 75 basis point increase in the federal funds rate, that is to say 0.75 percentage point. You took it off the table. Why?
Well, actually, what I said was that the committee had
not
decided,
actively considering, right? That's
I said we weren't actively considering right. that, but I said what we were actively considering, and this is just a factual recitation of what mm-hmm. happened at the meeting, mm-hmm. was a 50 basis point increase. That's a 0.5 percentage point increase, the first one in more than 20 years. And that we thought that if the economy performs about as expected, that it would be appropriate for there to be additional 50 basis point increases at the next two meetings. So, but I would just say we have a series of expectations about the economy. If things come in better than we expect, then we're prepared to do less. If they come in worse than we expect, then we're prepared to do more.
Let me be clear. 75 basis points is prepared to do more?
What you've seen is you've seen this committee adapt to the incoming data and the evolving outlook, and that's what we'll continue to do.
You also talked about a pathway. You said it's going to be challenging to get to this mythical soft landing. What does that pathway look like?
So a soft landing is really just getting back to 2% inflation while keeping the labor market strong. And it's quite challenging to accomplish that right now for a couple of reasons. One is just that unemployment is very, very low. The labor market's extremely tight and inflation is very high. So it will be challenging. It won't be easy. No one here thinks that it will be easy. Nonetheless, we think there are pathways, as you mentioned, for us to get there. And really what that means is just as we raise rates, what causes inflation is that demand and supply are out of whack. Mm-hmm. There's too much demand. For example, in the labor market, there's more demand for workers than there are people to take the jobs right now by a substantial margin. And because of that, wages are moving up at levels that are unsustainably high and not consistent with low inflation. And so what we need to do is we need to get demand down, give supply a chance to recover, and get those two aligned. So how might we do that? Right now, in the labor market, there are two job openings for every unemployed person. Yeah. That's historically high level. So in principle, and I'm not saying this will be easy to do, in principle, you could moderate demand, reduce demand to the point where job openings move down substantially, and the labor market gets much closer to being in balance. And that would affect, wages would still be moving up at healthy levels. They wouldn't have to go down, but ultimately they would be at levels that would be consistent with 2% inflation.
So here comes the pokey in the eye question. Did you blow it in being late and failing to recognize that inflation was going to stick around?
So the way I'd put it was this. We were, if you go back to the economy of February of 2020, right before the pandemic, 3.5% unemployment, inflation right on target, a little below 2%, and the economy's growing at a couple percent. It's a really nice place. Since then, we've been hit with, you know, the first pandemic in 100 years, global pandemic, and then a very, very strong response both from fiscal authorities and from us, followed by the outbreak of inflation, followed by the war in Ukraine, followed by now the big shutdowns all over China. So we've really been hit by a series of global, really, inflationary shocks. And so all around the world, you're seeing economies that are struggling with high inflation. Many, many countries around the world are having the highest inflation they've had in 40 years and struggling with the exact same things we are. So there's a lot of commonality. There are some differences. But, you know, Kaya, I have said, and I would say again, that, you know, if you had perfect hindsight, you'd go back and it probably would have been better for us to have raised rates a little sooner. I'm not sure how much difference it would have made, but we have to make decisions in real time based on what we know then. And we did the best we could. Now we see the picture clearly, and we're determined to use our tools to get us back to price stability.
You've said, not just in your last meeting, but many a time, that the Fed's tools are blunt instruments, trying to finesse a really difficult problem. Which gets me to this. One of the things we talked about the last time I was here, and it was in the context of President Trump and him piling on you, actually. And you said, you know, you control the controllable and you do what you can do. I wonder now if you are left with really only being able to, through your blunt monetary policy tools, control the controllable. You can't control supply in this economy. You can't control fiscal policy, right? I wonder how frustrated you are.
I wouldn't put it as frustrated. You know, I'm really honored to be able to play this role. And I guess I would say it this way. What we can control is demand. We can't really affect supply with our policies. And supply is a big part of the story here. But more than that, there are huge events, geopolitical events going on around the world that are going to play a very important role in the economy in the next year or so. So the question whether we can execute a soft landing or not, it may actually depend on factors that we don't control. But we should control the controllable. And what we control is there's a job to do on demand. Demand is out of whack with supply. As I mentioned, in the labor market, there's more demand than there are people to satisfy that demand. And we can address that directly, and we will, by trying to, you know, moderate demand in a way that lets the labor market get back in balance and help inflation get back to 2%.
One of the questions on my list that I did not manage to get to with Jay Powell, is he really upset that a little air is coming out of the stock market? Because more did today. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Also, below the fold, a little bit more from the Fed chair. Coming up.
Inflation affects everybody. You go to the grocery store, you feel it. You go to the gas station and you feel it.
Wait, that's not Jay Powell. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials down another 103 points today, about 0.3%, closed at 31,730. The S&P 500 down 5 points, 10%, 3930 there. NASDAQ actually gained 6 points, less than a 10%. 11,370. Retail gas prices are way up there, as you know. AAA says the national average for a gallon of regular gas, almost $4.42 today. Patrick DeHaan over at Gas Buddy observed that Americans are now spending $125 million more on gas every day than they did just one short month ago. A year ago, we were paying just over $3 on average for those 4 quarts of petrol. Good time to check in on some stocks in the electric vehicle industry then. Yeah, Rivian Automotive reported a quarterly loss not as steep as expected. Shares added almost 18%. Struggling startup Lordstown Motors announced a deal to buy an Ohio factory, to sell an Ohio factory, rather, has closed, and shares surged 47%. Lucid Group boosted 13% today. Finland is moving closer to NATO membership. You might have read that. So a quick look at Finland from an economic perspective. Relatively prosperous. Per capita GDP roughly in the same league as Germany and Australia. Total GDP, $270 billion or so. Exports, about a third of that. Bonds up, yield on the 10-year T-note down at 2.86%. You're listening to Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Gusto. Let your employees know you've got their back by signing up for Gusto for payroll and HR. More than 300,000 small business owners use Gusto. They offer benefits like health insurance, employee onboarding, and more. Get your payroll taxes filed, deductions calculated, and your team paid fast. No more pain. Just the joy of running your business. Get 3 months free when you go to gusto.com/marketplace. That's gusto.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. A huge part of what's going on with inflation right now, even apart from the supply chain stuff, as Chair Powell was saying up at the top of the program, is about the labor market and how tight it is and what that demand for workers means for the rest of the economy. So here we go with Jay Powell, part two.
You said maybe a meeting or two ago, and I apologize for them all running together, but I'm sure you can appreciate that. You said the labor market is tight to an unhealthy level in this economy. When you frame that in terms of people now being able to get jobs if they want jobs, how is that unhealthy?
That part of it is healthy. No, certainly from the standpoint of a worker, you see people able to change jobs, the level of people quitting to go find jobs that they prefer that pay better. Maybe they're doing the same thing but for a competitor. The quit level is at an all-time high, and wage increases are very high. You know, of course, all of us think that's great. When I said unhealthy, what I really meant was that there's an imbalance between demand and supply, and companies can't find workers. There aren't the workers. There's more demand than there are people to supply their labor. So that's not a healthy situation for an economy because it results in high inflation. That's a significant part of the inflationary story. So what we want is wages that are consistent with 2% inflation. You know, workers now are seeing their paycheck eaten up by inflation, mm-hmm. particularly people at the lower end of the income spectrum. And, you know, that's not a good situation. That's not a healthy situation. Healthy situation is when supply and demand are more closely to being aligned, and inflation is back down to our goal.
Almost whatever it takes?
You know, I just would say it this way. The committee and I are firmly committed to getting inflation back down to 2%. And the reason is that the economy doesn't work for anyone unless you do that. If you think about it, high inflation is not consistent with a great labor market. It's not consistent with a sustainable level of employment. It doesn't work for anybody. So we really it's the price stability is the bedrock in some sense on which the economy has to rest. And we've had it for a long time. We suddenly are hit by all these shocks, and like others around the world, we're struggling to restore it, but restore it we will.
You talked a little bit about Paul Volcker at the last meeting, and you've talked about him before. You said you knew him a little bit, but the thing that really struck you about him was that he always did what he saw to be the right thing. In arguably more difficult economic times than you have right now. My question is, how sure are you that what you are doing now is the right thing?
Yeah, so that's a good point. I do admire Paul Volcker. I think everyone admires Paul Volcker now. So I'm not to be singled out in any way for admiring him. You know, so he was a truly great public servant and person. And the point was that he did what he thought the right thing was, and he was prepared to be unpopular for that because he was looking at the medium and longer term, well, for the country. And I don't have any, you know, I think that's a good thing to keep in mind as you do public service jobs is don't think about what's popular, do what you think is right, and let everything else take care of itself. I take it as a general principle. It doesn't provide it doesn't shed any light on the current situation. We have to make an assessment of what the right thing to do is in the current situation. We know that what Paul Volcker did was right in his situation, and something like that might turn out to be right here, but I don't think we know that. I think we have a lot to learn about what the path ahead looks like.
One teensy little bit more from Chair Powell coming up in a couple of minutes. This was a busy day here at the Marketplace Bureau in Washington, D.C., and yes, this is going to sound like a humble brag, but whatever. On the way to the Fed to talk to Chair Powell, I took a quick swing by the White House for an interview with Cecilia Rouse, the chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors. Talked about a lot of things, of course. One of them also, of course, was inflation. Our whole interview coming up tomorrow here, though, is a sneak peek.
Let me ask you this. When you were having these conversations about the American Rescue Plan across West Executive Drive over there in the Oval Office, did anybody say, hey, you know what, Mr. President, we could get some inflation out of that?
We were really focused on the fact that we didn't know how long the pandemic would last, that we had had very anemic job growth. In fact, in December, we'd lost jobs, and that we needed to provide additional assistance to the American people. That's what we were very much focused on.
So you chose growth.
We chose growth, and we chose
perhaps
knowing that without those actions of the federal government, we may well have faced a double dip recession last year. Unemployment would be much more elevated today, and we would have had lower growth for not just this year, but for years to come. So yes, we took the path of supporting this government as our economy. As a result, we know that the debt was reduced by $350 billion, $360 billion last year. We're on track to reduce the debt by $1.5 trillion that last year because income tax revenues have come in higher than expected because of the growth, because people have jobs. So it is going to take us years. We will be looking back on this period for years trying to assess what was exactly the right combination of policies. But this president was prioritizing protecting people and businesses and getting us through in the best position possible.
Let me ask you about the president and the speech he gave on Tuesday about inflation and the efforts that you and his administration are making. Pretty clear that he's going directly to the American people because he understands not only the political risks, but also the economic risks to everybody out there. Do you think he's getting through? I ask because people feel terrible about this economy. The underlying economy is good, right? Jobs are strong. There's some growth. You know, last quarter was terrible, but there's growth on the horizon. But people still feel lousy.
Absolutely, and the president understands that because inflation affects everybody. You go to the grocery store, you feel it. You go to the gas station, and you feel it. And he understands that. He comes from a family where this kind of inflation would really hurt and cause a lot of anxiety every night. So you're right. He wants to get out to the American people, speak to the American people, not just from Washington, D.C. He was in Illinois yesterday. He's been around the country. And you're right. He's trying to have his economic team go out and explain that he really is focused on this. This is first and foremost the purview of the Federal Reserve. And it is a wonderful thing that at least three of the four current nominees have now been confirmed. Mm-hmm. We're looking forward to Michael Barr's testimony next week, and we need him to be confirmed as well. And he respects their independence, but we're all, we welcome the fact that they are now changing their policy stance towards how they're addressing the price stability mandate versus the full employment mandate.
Since you mentioned the Fed, and ordinarily I wouldn't because you, this administration that is, are steadfast in not critiquing the Fed. But since you brought it up, do you think Chair Powell can thread the needle and get that soft landing?
Look, I personally have a lot of faith in Chair Powell and his entire team. This is a difficult job that they have. There's no question about it. But I will say this, because of the growth that we had last year, we have some resilience. We have some headroom for the Fed to be making the dials that they need to make in terms of raising their funds rates, the interest rates, dialing back their asset program. So they have some more room to maneuver in addressing inflation than even many of our counterparts around the world as their central banks make similar moves.
Cecilia Rouse. She runs the White House Council of Economic Advisors. The rest of that interview on this program tomorrow. This final note on the way out today, if you know me and if you know this show at all, then you know what's coming next.
I need you to roll with me on this last one. We've got a little game we play on the show. It's called What is Jay Powell Thinking in Five Words or Less? And I ask our Friday afternoon panelists when we have a big monetary policy topic come up, I say, okay, what is Jay Powell thinking in five words or less? And I would not be able to forgive myself if sitting across from Jay Powell, I don't ask Jay Powell what Jay Powell is thinking in five words or less. I should tell you I did this with Obama, and he blew it. He went on for like a minute, so no pressure.
Five words or less. I'm going to go with what I really am thinking is
okay.
Get inflation back under control.
Oh, man. Boom. Jay Powell, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Kai. Good to see you.
All right, we got to go. No moment of economic context today because I got to tell you, the whole show has been economic context today. We'll owe you one, I guess. Amir Bibawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Peacher, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.